You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee stops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport. Today we are in Caltagirone.
Cozze cittene, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, non spigudeci ora. Cozze cittene, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, se non mangiano le femmine.
Hello and welcome to the Cycling Podcast. My name's Lionel Burney and I'm joined in Sicily by Daniel Freeb.
You're going with the English pronunciation.
Daniel Freeber.
You're confusing everyone.
Daniel Freeber.
Where's our usual host, the buff?
He has gone home. He went home from Israel.
He had a bruising encounter, didn't he, when he was trying to get out of Israel.
The exit interview, I gather, was extensive. Yeah. His Facebook profile was looked into. He was asked why he'd been to, was it Doha?
It's Google search history, I understand. Was brought up.
I'm surprised they let him go home at all. Anyway, Daniel, you've joined us fresh from Yorkshire, having done your own alternative hipsters version of the big start, the Grande Partenza in Yorkshire. How was Yorkshire?
Well, racing wise, I think it would have been great if the 4 days in Yorkshire could have been bolted onto the front of the Giro in place of the 3 days that you actually had. That's what I gather anyway. I didn't see an awful lot of the first three stages.
So you think you got the long straw?
Absolutely. Oh. Absolutely.
Well, oh well. Well, here we are in Sicily. We've had an eventful day, haven't we? We've got slight concern over our hire car, which had a soft tyre. Not as catastrophic as some of our colleagues. Rob Hales and Matt Stevens have suffered a double puncture this evening on what was an extraordinary cross-country drive from the finish in Caltagirone to our hotel where we are now in somewhere not far
Licata,
not far from tomorrow's start in Agrigento. We are a little bit behind schedule because it's been quite a testing evening. But, you know, the listeners don't want to know about all of our
They're
trials.
All testing us. They're all testing, Lionel, and we just have to buffalo through,
but I'm wondering,
even in his absence.
I'm wondering whether we should record this in, double speed so we make sure that we get dinner this evening. But let's kick off with the tale of the tappa, stage four, Catania to Caltagirone. It was the first stage on Italian soil in Sicily, and the break that went contained Quentin Jourgui of AG2R, Maxim Belkov of Katusha, Marco Frapporti of Androni, who's in the break again, as was Enrico Barbin of Bardiani, the king of the mountains at the moment, and Jacopo Mosca of Villa Tristina. And they were away most of the day. There was a brief moment with around 100 kilometres to go where there was a split in the peloton, and it took a little while for both halves of the peloton to come back together. When we got to the 30 kilometres to go mark, it was just Frapporti, Mosca and Belkov out in front alone, and they stayed out there until around 13 and a half to go. Just inside the last 10 kilometres, Valerio Conti attacked for Team UAE. They'd been setting a strong pace, so clearly they wanted to set up Conti. You may remember at Peschici last year, he was in a great position to try and win on an uphill finish, but lost it going around the right-hand corner, tight U-bend. And was it Izaguirre won that day? One of the Izaguirre brothers won that day. I'm not even going to guess.
One of the seven Izaguirre brothers.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I'm not going to guess which one. Anyway, Conti was out there making a good fist of it. There was another crash just as the road narrowed down with 7 kilometres to go, and that kind of disrupted the finale a little bit as far as positioning was concerned. So Conti was still out in front with 3.5 kilometres to go, and there were splits all over the place. Lotto Fixall played an absolute blinder. They managed to force a couple of splits, and it was all fracturing. Tosh van der Sande was up there. We'll hear from him in a little bit, setting up Tim Wellens for an impressive stage win. He won at Roccaraso 2 years ago on a much harder uphill finish. He won here today for Lotto Fixall, and the news really is that Chris Froome lost 21 seconds. So the start of his Giro, it goes from not so great to really not so great. I won't say bad to worse. Quite a few changes in the top 10. Most notably, Simon Yates is now up to third overall because he was just behind Wellens, Michael Woods and Enrico Bataglin, who were the first three over the line. No change to the other jerseys. Elia Viviani is still in the points competition lead. Barbini is still in the King of the Mountains. And Max Schachmann is still the best young rider. But Daniel, what did you make of Tim Wellens' victory and the way Lotto Fixall pulled that off today?
Well, the first thing, Lionel, that struck me right from this morning was that a finish like today's used to be sort of stock in trade for the Giro, particularly in the sort of noughties. There used to be maybe three or four typically finishes like this in the first 2 weeks, and there would be a whole host of riders who would consider to be absolute specialists for this type of finish. So you'd have Paolo Bettini, Davide Rebellin, Riccardo Ricciardo,
Danilo Di Luca,
and you would also have a lot of the general classification riders, the contenders, who were that kind of rider, who were climbers who could finish quite fast. And time bonuses ended up playing quite a big role in the general classification for that reason. This year's sort of collection of overall contenders are notable by their sort of absence of finishing speed. And I think that's a reflection on how the Giro has maybe evolved in the last few years. Big emphasis on long climbs and very high climbs. And I think it's maybe even a bigger reflection on the fact that the Vuelta has really kind of sucked in a lot of the very explosive climbers who really see that race as a massive opportunity to win stages. And as I say, with the time bonuses on offer, so it's 10 for a win, if you look ahead to stages like the Mercogliano di Monte Vergine in a few days, that's a finish we've been to a few times, and guys like Kunigo and Di Luca won, and you know, they would pick up bonus seconds there. I almost feel that it's a missed opportunity for someone. I don't know who that mythical someone would be, but for a kind of fast finishing GC guy to be here and just taking some easy seconds, really.
Yeah, Tim Wellens, obviously, he got the 10 seconds. Michael Woods, 6 seconds. He's been spoken of as a potential outsider for the podium. Maybe it's a stretch too far to think he could win the Giro, but he's obviously started the race well. I caught a quick word with him at the finish line, so let's just hear what Michael Woods of Team EF Education First said.
Yeah, managed to catch back up and felt great today. Just guys were really good for me. Everyone was helping me a ton on the team. Tom Van Asbroek was amazing, but Wellens was just the better man. I mean, yeah, it was great, but I wanted to win.
Michael, how do you feel, you know, a number of weeks on after Liège-Bastogne-Liège, you know, the first chance to really test the form these last few days?
Yeah, you spend so much time just sitting in your bed thinking, oh, will it be good enough? Spend even all this race thinking, am I going to have it for the climb? But now I'm racing enough these days now that I have a better understanding of where I'm going to be at. And I felt great throughout the day, so I knew I was going to have a good one today.
And what about the early start yesterday and the flight and not having a regular rest day? Was that a concern at all?
No. Everyone's going through the same thing. I think it was a really cool thing that we did yesterday and the day before. I mean, even I just enjoyed where I was at. Like, it was pretty cool to be in the car, driving along the border where you looked over, one side was Egypt, one side was Israel. You could see Jordan as well. I wouldn't have had that experience if I wasn't here.
And in terms of the next 2 days on Sicily, what are you expecting? Is tomorrow a little bit similar to today?
We came here to win a stage, and 2 seconds doesn't cut it yet. We want to win.
So Woods, unequivocal there. They were going for the win, trying to get off the mark. Came very close, but didn't quite have enough to come round Tim Wellens at the finish. Lotto Fixall played a blinder, really, didn't they? Because they took that tricky approach by the scruff of the neck. You're talking about that generation of riders who would eat up those short hilltop summit finish, not really a summit finish, but short hilltop finishes a decade or so ago. It was trickier than that, though, wasn't it? With the first climb up and then the drop down and the unpredictable roads. And, well, we've seen to, well, firsthand, just how bad some of the Sicilian roads are. The surfaces on the race route, and certainly in the last 10, 20K.
They were apparently being repaired, weren't they, an hour ahead of the race caravan.
So we're led to believe. Gerard Gruber, very well respected and excellent photographer, tweeted something this morning saying that they were filling holes with hot tarmac just sort of an hour or so before the race was due. I mean, that seems to me to be quite a Sicilian thing, that leaving it to the last minute to do that kind of patch-up work. But Lotto played an absolute blinder, and I spoke at the finish also to Tosh van der Sander, who was instrumental in helping Tim Wellens. They were up there with numbers, but they played it very smartly as well.
How tricky was the run-in and the approach and the little descent, and how key was that in setting up the win?
Yeah, I also didn't know the corners very well, so it was a little bit guessing, and But I think if you take the lead, you choose your own lines, and that's what we did, and I think that's really a big advantage.
And obviously Tim's in great form, but you as a team managed to get him into the position he needed to be in. You took responsibility when you needed to.
Yeah, we were very committed as a team, and I think that's the most important. We had one goal, and everybody was focused on Tim, and I think that's the most important thing, to win as a team.
What's it like in your team with Quickstep winning everything every week? Is the pressure on a little bit? Does that come across at all?
No, I don't think so. I think we're a different team. We're really Belgium, and Quickstep they have such good riders, and we have not so many like leaders, and so, but we do good. I think our season was already very good, and if you see what we won, we can only be happy.
And lastly, Tim's obviously in good form, so I mean, maybe another victory on Etna. That's the kind of climb that could also suit him, or do you think maybe too hard?
I think, I don't know, he's focused on that. Maybe already tomorrow, it's also a nice finish for him. And on Etna, I don't, we will see. It also depends how the wind is on the climb. But we can race now really relaxed because we have stage wind.
You think it's possibly on Etna one for the GC guys more?
I think so, yeah.
Thank you very much.
I was a little bit surprised there, van der Sander kind of playing down Wellens' chances on Etna. Perhaps tomorrow's stage might suit him better, according to his teammate, because Wellens won at Roccaraso 2 years ago, a very impressive attack from a long way out. He said in the press conference that he felt this win had that little bit of extra special to it because he beat the whole lot, you know, from close in, rather than sort of making an attack with, I think, 11 or 12 kilometres to go. But the Etna climb, I don't know whether that would be out of the question for Wellens. I mean, it'd be interesting to see.
I think it would be out of the question for Wellens, Lionel.
You do?
That's what I think. No, I do think it's harder. I think it's harder than the way the race went up last year, and last year was an unusual day and an unusual stage in that there was a headwind and it was very defensive. I think it's too steep. Wellens is also not renowned for his finishing ability. I mean, today was a bit of a breakthrough in that respect because he just waited and did the simple, most sensible thing, which was to kind of look around and realise that he was faster and more explosive than a lot of the other guys who were going to get up that climb. Usually he doesn't do that. Usually he tries to sort of, you know, pirouette and flounce around and sort of Cruyff turn his way into, you know, up blind alleys, doesn't he, with about 15 kilometres to go.
Are you saying he's a sort of the Belgian equivalent of a whimsical flaneur?
He is. He is quite whimsical, isn't he? And the way he rides, certainly.
But he certainly said, you know, the GC is out of the question for him in a Grand Tour. He says he's quite happy. He knows the type of rider he is. That's for the week-long stage races and perhaps for the classics as well. But you're right. He did certainly, he pulled it off, but he got himself into that position, as did a number of other riders who were up there. I mean, Simon Yates, you know, just looking really good in his opening few days. A very impressive and slightly surprising time trial result. Up there, and the thing that struck me about him, and also Chavez, who was up there looking sprightly as well, they punched such a small hole in the wind. I mean, Yates was really racing. I mean, he's low on the drops, he's keeping his head down, literally. And you know that he looks to me like he's really racing hard for every second, and he missed out on a time bonus there. But of course, they pinched 4 seconds over the next group, including Dumoulin and Rowan Dennis, and Pinot was 10 seconds back, and then Aru, Bettencourt, and then you have to look a little bit further down. 30th place for Chris Froome, 21 seconds down, and we'll talk about the start of his Giro in part two.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Thank you to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast. Thanks to their support, we are here at the Giro d'Italia and the other two Grand Tours this season. If you want to sample a bit of Italy on your bike, maybe you should check out rafa.cc/travel. Rafa's love for Italy is written through their DNA. They've even referenced the pink of the Maglia Rosa in their brand colours. But the storied history of Italian cycling is just one ingredient in making the country an ideal destination for a bike riding holiday. The food, the wine, the sun-kissed terrain and unmistakable culture makes Italy the perfect place to be a cyclist, and they have trips all over the place, including the Dolomites, and I checked, definitely in the Dolomites. They run from sort of roughly June to October. Check out rafa.cc/travel if that sounds like your bag. Daniel, Chris Froome has not had the best start to this Giro. He's got the salbutamol cloud, if I can put it like that, hanging over him, following him around. Today, caught out in the wrong position, lost 21 seconds. Not the way that Grand Tour victories are built, is it, these opening few days?
No, it's not. And in our little teaser that we put online earlier, I suggested that I was going to explain, I was going to lift the lid on the animated discussion that took place between King Kelly Elizonde and Chris Froome. There was a huge scrum of riders after the finish today. It was very, dare I say, badly organised. It was difficult for the riders to get back down past the finish line again, and they were all kind of hemmed in. And anyway, Froome, he didn't speak to the media immediately. I think he did at the team bus, but he did speak to his teammate, King Kenny Elizonde, the pint-sized, the matchbox French climber.
Were you close enough to hear what was said?
I wasn't, or were you just observing, and I don't think, and I suggested in our teaser earlier that it was something scurrilous, and Chris Froome was very angry. I'm not sure that was the case. In fact, I'm sure it wasn't the case. Chris Froome was trying to explain to Kenny Elizonde what had gone wrong in terms of his positioning, because obviously it wasn't quite right. And but we will endeavour to find out from I will search out King Kenny tomorrow, and I will ask him what exactly went wrong today. But Froome, no, he hasn't started well. I mean, I spoke to a couple of people at Sky this morning. They're pretty, well, at least publicly, as you would expect, they're trying to stay calm, and they're making all the right noises. They say that Froome's not being affected by the injuries from his crash in the Recce in Israel. But, you know, you mentioned Simon Yates, Lionel, and we always say that, well, prologues or short time trials at the start of a Grand Tour are always significant. If someone loses as little time relative to what you expect, as Simon Yates did the other day, then it means they're going really, really well. And also the first few stages, you know, whether they be sprint finishes or particularly stages like today, uphill finishes, if a guy is close to the front, then it's generally a pretty good sign that they're going well, and they're sprightly, and they're lucid. And, you know,
yeah,
you
look, I think that's a very good point, because, you know, 10 seconds lost, 15 seconds lost, you know, it's small in the grand scheme of things, but it's what it tells us about how a rider is doing. You know, it's riders who are going well don't get caught in bad positions often. You know, that's part of bike racing, isn't it? It's when somebody is really on song, They have the legs to get out of trouble, anticipate difficulty before it happens. They have teammates who, you know, if they're all on song as well. And I think that's what we've seen a number of years in the Tour de France with Chris Froome, is that they don't make mistakes.
And no, and that's a trait that's kind of been amplified as the years have gone by. He's got better and better at negotiating this sort of first week, first 10 days of a Grand Tour.
So not off to the greatest start for him, but we might see the legs open up a bit on Etna on Thursday. Who knows? I mean, that's going to be the first big test. But these Sicilian roads, I mean, we talked about it, you know, our own challenges with them in our hire car. Some of the holes in the road that we had to drive along were horrendous. And well, in tomorrow's episode of Kilometre Zero, you'll hear Max Sciandri's verdict on the Sicilian roads, potholes that can swallow up riders. And it's making these days challenging, isn't it? The stress will start to sort of build up. It'll be the same again tomorrow. It'll be the same again on the run towards Etna. It's kind of three tricky days in harder than expected days, I think, in Israel. Certainly the third stage, the one down to Eilat, was the toll it took on the riders because it was long and there was a lot of up and down, you know, was more than perhaps the road book would have suggested. And these stages are tricky as well. And so when you see the riders that sort of make the cut and those that don't, I mean, you know, you would have thought that Froome would have been able to stay up there and not lose further time to Dumoulin and co.
Yeah, I think they'll all be pretty relieved to get off Sicily in the same way that they were. A lot of the riders were relieved to get out of Israel, not because, you know, they thought it was terrible there, but just the travel involved and those first couple of sprint stages, I gather, were pretty stressful. And then a few of them had a pretty punishing travel schedule, didn't they?
Well, they did. I mean, we made that journey. I was on one of the RCS flights. I was actually on the last flight to leave Eilat. It was quite an extraordinary morning, really, because we'd been told, certainly by the RCS organisers of the Giro, that, you know, we're leaving from a modern airport that's not been open to the public yet. And when we got up to Ovda, around about an hour's drive out of Eilat into what was basically desert, you know, the dust and sand was hanging in the air, making visibility pretty tricky. It looked more to me like a disused military airfield than an airport that was ever going to see commercial flight. The flight I was on was the last of four to leave, and it had on it BMC, Sky, Bahrain, Team UAE. I think Mitchelton Scott were on it as well. So, and we were up at 5:45 to get that flight. Landed at just before 1 p.m. Sicilian time. You know, it was a 3 hours 10 minute flight. Not terrible, but, you know, quite tiring. I was pretty tired, and I've not ridden three stages of the Giro, and the riders that were on the first, second and third flights, you know, they were getting up at sort of 4:30 in the morning to make those flights. So we know that all of the riders then would have done a short ride in the afternoon just to kind of shake out the legs. But as we heard from Mike Woods, you know, it's the same for everybody, and yet it's slightly out of the ordinary to have that amount of travel and then come into three not straightforward days.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Independent research shows 10% of sports nutrition products would get a professional rider banned. Trust Science in Sport, the world's highest standard of banned substance testing.
Thank you to Science in Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. If you would like 25% off all of their products, go to scienceinsport.com and fill up your basket. And then when you check out, enter the code SISCP25. That's SISCP25 for a 25% discount on all of their energy bars, gels, powders that you mix up to make into drinks and so on. Sticking with nutrition, Daniel.
Oh, yes.
Well, you arrived in Sicily.
I've got something to say.
Go on.
I was monitoring this morning the correlation between what I'm going to call the canola quotient. So I saw two influential members of teams of general classification contenders stuffing their face with cannoli at the start in Catania this morning. So Cannoli, the thing is, I don't really know much about Cannoli etiquette. That's a real gap in my knowledge. Cannoli are a dessert, a Sicilian dessert. They're kind of like brandy snaps, but without the brandy, and filled with sweet ricotta. And they're very, very popular in Sicily. I think it's not unheard of to have them for breakfast. And to have them with a coffee. Anyway, the two, Giuseppe Martinelli, who has won more Giro d'Italia than I think any other director sportif, he's the Astana DS here, so he's in charge of Superman Lopez. And I saw him splatting himself in the face with an enormous cannolo in Catania this morning. And Julian Pino, the brother of Thibaut Pino, he was effusive about he was trying to get us to follow him into one vendor of cannoli, one shop near the start that he claimed, after extensive research over the last 24 hours, did the best cannoli in Catania. Wow. And then he walked out of that one and then went into another shop selling cannoli.
Well, by looking at the results on the stage, Thibaut Pino was 13th at 4 seconds, the last of that little group. And Miguel Angel Lopez Moreno, Superman, was in the Chris Froome group. So I think the cannoli quotient is absolute nonsense already. I'm writing it off as insignificant. But last night I did have Rigatoni Norma, which is another Sicilian specialty, actually specific to Catania, where we were last night. It was okay.
Wasn't the best restaurant.
No.
D'Antonio in Catania, it was a solid 6 out of 10.
Yeah,
but it wasn't.
But Catania, I mean, it looks like no one has spent any money on that town for about 40 years.
It's similar to Watford?
No, that's very harsh. That's very harsh. The people of Watford will be bombarding you on Twitter. I urge them to, with abuse for that. Catania, in common with a couple of the places we've seen today, I mean, Sicily, it's as tough as old boots in places, isn't it? I mean, even we're in an extremely nice hotel on top of the hill here. I'm looking forward to seeing it in the daylight. But as we were driving into town, piles of rubbish just uncollected, just dumped on the side of the road. I mean, not sort of waist height, but head height piles of rubbish. Absolutely extraordinary.
You're going to be talking about Sicily more in the coming days, Lionel, because you're going to be learning some Italian and you're going to be talking about Sicily in Italian.
I'm looking forward to this. But just to update on my rigatoni norma, this is a dish of aubergine, tomatoes and a kind of quite a salty ricotta cheese that goes on the top. I would say it was a 6 out of 10. I actually think the one I make at home is better, although I can't get that really
you showed me a picture and I didn't approve of what you'd done with your sauce.
Well, this is another thing where it's like the 11 o'clock cappuccino rule. Daniel, so etiquette is you have your pan of sauce and then you tip your pasta into
basically,
the pan of sauce,
yes,
and stir the two together.
Never just serve you the sauce just willy-nilly, just chucked on a bowl of pasta.
Well, willy-nilly is a phrase that appears in our Kilometre Zero, which is out tomorrow morning. It's on the subject of Il Garibaldi, the road book, which everybody from the riders to the media follow. As Max Chiandri says, it's the Bible of the Giro. And somebody uses the phrase willy-nilly. What is it in Italian? Well, you did the translation, Daniel.
We'll come back to that tomorrow.
We'll move on. Speaking of Max Chiandri, Rowan Dennis defended the pink jersey again today. We've talked about this on the opening weekend in Israel, how BMC Racing's big goal for the Giro was to come here, win the opening time trial, take the pink jersey and carry it back to Italy. That looked like it wasn't going to happen because Tom Dumoulin won the opening time trial. But then BMC Racing launched a modern-day coup, really. I can't remember an intermediate sprint being quite so significant in recent years. I do remember a long time back when sort of Johan Museo and Sean Yates were battling for the yellow jersey at the Tour de France. I think that would have been 1994, and there was all sorts of shenanigans at intermediate sprints. But BMC Racing pulled off something of a tactical coup. Max Chiandri told me all about it as we were
boarding
the plane.
Bloody marvellous coup. That's what it was. A bloody marvellous coup.
It was. Well, he told me about
it.
Do you
get it?
I do get it, yes. He told me about it as we were boarding the plane yesterday. He was playing down his role, the significance of his role in persuading Rowan Dennis, Nicholas Roach and the other big characters in the team to go for it. But I spoke to him this morning about how they managed to prize the pink jersey from the shoulders of Tom Dumoulin a couple of days ago.
So Friday night in Jerusalem, you were very disappointed. Saturday night in Tel Aviv, you had the pink jersey. Tell me how it happened.
You know, they did it. It wasn't me on the bike, but I think a bit of motivation that day came from me, and I feel like a little bit of that jersey was mine. It took a while. We swallowed the loss, but then in the evening, I was like, we have to try tomorrow. We have that 3 second bonus. We can't just let it go like that. You know, it's like we're so disappointed to see somebody sprint when somebody like doesn't really care and gets that 3 second. That 3 second changes our life in a way. So in the morning meeting, I did an overview of what I'm going to expect from the Giro, what I want from the guys. And then I went into the detail of the stage. And you know, first of all, Rowan was a little bit, hear the word sprint, he was a little bit reluctant. Like, you know, it's not something he was quite familiar with. But he's a guy what can sprint. And he's a guy what can, he actually won a stage last year in Tour des Alpes in a 60-man sprint uphill, slightly uphill. This is a little bit different, so we started off, we kind of closed a few gaps on Campenards, we closed a few gaps here and there, and then we kind of wasn't quite on it yet. So the race had to kind of evolve a little bit more, then it came, you know, a couple of guys came to the car, I explained again what I wanted, and then just 30k to go to the sprint was around 110. It clicked, and when the click went, we just nailed it. We went in the front, we closed the gap to the three-man breakaway, and then I had Jürgen, and Rowan just said, only thing came through the race, through the radio, he said, I want Jürgen to lead him out, and the rest, they did it.
When you first said, look, we've got to try this, what was the, were you monitoring the faces of the riders to see what the reaction was?
Yeah, you look at the guys, and you know, even if I'm in the car, you're part of that team, you know, so you are on the bike with them. And initially, it didn't really, you know, I think everybody is still kind of a little bit on, even if Ron gave it 110% on the TT, we're kind of still on the loss side, you know. They didn't see that opportunity. And Ron, the first thing when I saw him in, with a jersey, said, thanks for making me believe in it, you know, so I think he was really appreciative. That
were a couple of the riders a bit sceptical, maybe?
Yeah, you know, obviously it's the first day in the Grand Tour. You've got a lot of kilometres to do, and to start riding for nearly 6 to 70k. I mean, everybody's on the conservative side. You know how riders are. That's how they are. But I said, guys, just imagine. I mean, it's first of all, it's an hour of work. It's not a massive amount of work. It's an hour of work, and if you get it, then you'll have a different feeling with the jersey. So you'll. I've been in a team where I won a Grand Tour, you know, and it's like you're flying on a different level. So, you know, they slowly bit into it, and they did it.
And is it Andy Reese's funeral today?
It was yesterday, yeah. Yesterday. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it's something we talked about, and I talked about to a couple of journalists 3 weeks ago to bring the jersey in Italy. First day would be amazing. Thank you for everything he's done for us and how he likes cycling, and it's a small thing for us, what we can give to him, but it means a lot.
The question here now, Daniel, is Rowan Dennis in pink survived today really comfortably, never looked like he was going to be out of position. His team were keeping him right up at the front when it mattered. He was alert when he needed to be and took responsibility when he had to make sure that he didn't get caught on the wrong side of splits and was in that group closing up to the Wellens, Simon Yates group. As they were going to the line. Tomorrow could be a similar-ish stage. It's shorter, might be a little bit punchier maybe, but the big one looming on the horizon, as indeed it does really, you can see it from miles around, can't you? Mount Etna, it's a live volcano still, isn't it? Are we expecting some kind of eruption there, or do we see Rowan Dennis carrying the pink jersey to mainland Italy?
I think Rowan Dennis will probably, unfortunately for him, lose the pink jersey There are too many riders who are close to him on general classification, too many good climbers. Rowan Dennis is yet to really prove his credentials as a bona fide GC contender in major tours. As I say, I hope that changes for him, but there's going to be too much pressure from guys like Superman Lopez, who are already in a position where they have to make up time.
There's quite a powerful holy trinity there already, isn't there? Lopez, Chris Froome, Fabio Aru all need to kind of make up time. Okay, it's only a fistfuls of seconds at the moment. It's not the it hasn't stretched out so far to be panic stations just yet, but in order to kind of recover this first section of the Giro, can you anticipate any of those three doing anything, or does it, like last year, does it really depend on the wind direction?
I think it definitely depends on the wind direction. As I said, it's a slightly different angle of attack this year, and I think last year was a prevailing wind, so even if it's a prevailing wind again, the wind for the riders will be slightly different. Quite a number of the riders know this climb well. Thibaut Pinot spent a long time in Sicily in the spring with his brother, the aforementioned Julian Guzzler of Canoli. They had a long training camp, so did multiple ascents of Etna, as did Fabio Aru in the spring. He was at altitude, staying on Etna as well. And I think those are two riders who know they need to make up time. They have lost ground, and a lot of the climbers have. Well, they had a really poor first time trial. That said, we're already a quarter of the way into the total of the time trialing that there is in this Giro. 9 kilometers out of essentially about 40. So they will be slightly concerned, I think, and they will want to sort of push on and use this summit finish, not least because some of the summit finishes coming up are quite benign. Mercogliani Montevergine is one where Rowan Dennis would keep the pink jersey, and even Gran Sasso d'Italia, the one that comes after that, is hard in the last couple of kilometres, but it's pretty steady before that. So Etna is really the hardest mountaintop finish until we get up north to the Alps and the Dolomites.
Yeah, so they're the two mountain stages next weekend, aren't they? Medium mountain stages, really. So Etna is the first big battleground. And of course, I guess everyone in the race is realising that last year, if they were expecting to shake off Tom Dumoulin eventually, well, they can't make that same mistake 2 years running. I mean, they know if they don't shake him at all on Etna, they know he's going to be good for the next two big summit finishes, and then you're almost into the third week. I mean, that will surely be playing on people's minds.
Well, yeah, and headwind notwithstanding, I think we said at the time, even last year on Etna, that it was a missed opportunity, and the climbers might come to rue that missed opportunity, and I think they did ultimately.
Well, that's still a couple of days away. We've had quite an extraordinary day, really. I mean, our problems, really. We don't want to burden the listeners with that. But it's been a challenging old day, hasn't
challenging,
it? Worrying about a
tough old place, Sicily, as you said, Lionel. Tough old place. Tomorrow we're going to Santa Ninfa, scene of one of the worst earthquakes in Italian history in 1968. So it's the 50th anniversary of that. So that we're crossing some fairly interesting, rugged terrain. We're going into sort of mafia heartland, not too far from Corleone, famous of Godfather, infamy.
God, I mean, you're making me anxious already. I mean,
I've only been here a few hours. Wait till we get to Calabria.
Well, let's see what tomorrow's stage has in store. As I mentioned, Kilometre Zero, Il Garibaldi, talking about the Giro d'Italia's Bible. That will be out in the morning. If you've not yet listened to the Friends of the Podcast episodes of Kilometre Zero, the first one was a range of views on our weekend in Israel and the Giro's decision to start the race in Israel. Kilometre Zero is available for Friends of the Podcast. Sign up at thecyclingpodcast.com/friends. It's £15, and for that you get all of the episodes of Kilometre Zero, but you also get a whole host of other feature-length episodes, the most recent of which was The Search for the Pink Panther and the story of the 1978 Giro d'Italia, Belgium's last Grand Tour win by Johan de Munck. No chance that Tim Wellens is going to do that anytime soon, but it was certainly an impressive stage win for him today. So we will be back tomorrow, hopefully a little less flustered. We will have to, well, it's coming up to 10 o'clock and we haven't had any dinner yet. And I hope it's just cannoli.
Yeah, I'm looking nervously at the restaurant staff, hoping that they're going to take pity on us.
Well, let's get on with it then. Thank you, Daniel.
Buonanotte.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa. Ci gira nella tenevo giardina, che la raccolgo con l'acqua e l'ovina. Ci gira nella...